Ladies and gentlemen, this is Conrad Nagel speaking to you from Hollywood, California. Yesterday, Sunday morning at 10:42, George Gershwin, that moving force in American music, was taken from us by that thing we poor foolish mortals call death. A great man never dies but lives on in his work. George Gershwin was beloved to all of the many who were proud to know him and be distinguished by the term my friend. We are at great personal loss with the passing of a genius, the passing of a friend. But it's a source of inspiration to know that far into the world, the music of George Gershwin will live as an undying reminder of the spirit that lived within the breast of a great man. Tonight, gathered here in the West, are many of those who knew George Gershwin and admired him. We're here to pay a tribute, to voice his great music, to sing his songs. Another great songwriter of days gone by said, "You can write the nation's laws if you but let me write the nation's songs." So it was with Gershwin. Tonight, musicians, artists, composers, and conductors come together to express as best they know how their tribute to the memory of George Gershwin as a man, and to dedicate to a fortunate future the melodies he composed as a musician. Reflecting the great love he had for his instrument, George Gershwin composed much music designed for interpretation on the piano, showing distinct traces of the type of composition that was later to make him world famous. In 1927 came a series of piano preludes, one of which we now hear is arranged for full orchestra under the direction of David Brookman. The prelude, number 2. Thank you. Dr. Otto Klemperer, conductor and general musical director of the Los Angeles Philharmonic Orchestra, now addresses you.
Doctor? Every man in the world is so shocked today about the terrible event of George Gershwin's early death that it is difficult to talk about him, to concentrate thoughts on his artistic personality. He was a musician full of invention, the strongest praise which can be given to a composer. A modern song can have just the same artistic value as any classical music, if it is full of real musical invention. Gershwin was able to give us such songs. It is dangerous to make the prophet, but it may be that in musical history, Gershwin's music will play the same role for modern American life as his great French colleague Jacques Offenbach did for the time of the Second Empire. His tunes will never be forgotten.
Thank you, Doctor. The exquisite melody Summertime from Gershwin's American opera Porgy and Bess reflects a beauty of expression not often found in modern music. We now hear Summertime with the voice of Virginia Verrill.
Hush-a-bye, baby, don't you cry. All the time and the jumping and the cotton is high. Oh, your daddy's rich and your mammy's good looking. Oh, hush, little baby.
Orchestra leader and composer Johnny Green left a rehearsal a few minutes ago to say just a word in tribute to his friend.
George Gershwin's music will speak for itself. I must leave it to critics far more qualified than I am to offer opinions either in praise or in criticism of Gershwin the artist, of the product of this indisputably important talent. However, I am one of the privileged and comparatively few who knew George well and for a long time, 12 years. As a man, a friend, a constructive help to younger and less accomplished artists than himself, I can tell you about him. The rank and file in the higher places of the musical profession are full of young men and women who will tell you proudly that their earliest and bitterest days of struggle were gladdened by encouragement and opportunity graciously given by George Gershwin. He was kind without being a softy, strong without being a bully. He was fine and sensitive without being unable to take it. His was the rare gift of a sense of humor that sparkled. His devotion to the ideals of loyalty and generosity was manifest in each phase of his life with his family and his friends. I speak for every young musician
in saluting the memory of George Gershwin as a cherished symbol of the example we may dare hope to follow and to which we shall always look with the greatest respect and reverence. Thank you, Johnny Green. One of the brightest stars of all the many that George Gershwin placed in the musical firmament is one that still sparkles with all the vivaciousness that he loved to embody in his show songs. From the eminently successful production Girl Crazy, the orchestra plays I Got Rhythm. Merle Armitage, ladies and gentlemen, whom we are about to introduce, is one of the foremost impresarios of the West and manager of our Philharmonic Auditorium. Not only did Mr. Armitage manage George Gershwin's concerts, but he had close association with him, as both were enthusiasts for painting, fine books, and other arts. It was Merle Armitage who, for the first time, introduced George Gershwin to Western audiences. Mr. Armitage.
George Gershwin made the most important contribution to the music of our time in America of any composer. He lived in many worlds. He had the love and the respect of Broadway. He was one of the great factors in the motion picture industry. And yet he was one of the greatest possible influences in the world of serious music. His music was America. America in action and America of today, our day. He understood the youth of our country, and they, in turn, understood him. The great tragedy of his passing is that his unique genius cannot be replaced. He stood in the transition period, and even though his greatest days were undoubtedly before him, he has left an indelible mark on his time. No one could have been a more enthusiastic co-worker or a warmer-hearted and generous friend.
Thank you, Mr. Armitage. And now Johnny Green at the piano will give us The Man I Love.
Thank you.
Our thanks to you, Johnny Green. Just a few brief years ago, George Gershwin chose to astonish and convert to the cause of modern music many of those who up until that time had refused to consider the composers of today worthy of attention. Gershwin introduced at that time his opera, Porgy and Bess. The success story of this work is a familiar one, and we now hear selections recalling the opening of an important new realm in American music, a study of the score of Porgy and Bess.
Tribute to George Gershwin will continue in just one moment. This is the Mutual Broadcasting System.
folks so busy, I keep busy biding my time. Next year, something's bound to happen. This year, I'll just keep on napping and biding my time. 'Cause that's the kind of guy I'm. There's no regretting when I'm setting biding my time.
Ladies and gentlemen, a great musician has come to offer a word of tribute to another great musician. He is Dr. Arnold Schoenberg, world-famous composer-conductor. Doctor?
George Gershwin was one of this rare kind of musicians to whom music is not a matter of more or less ability. Music to him was the air he breathed, the food which nourished him, the drink that refreshed him. Music was what made him feel, and music was the feeling he expressed. Directness of this kind is given only to great men, and there is no doubt that he was a great composer. What he has achieved was not only to the benefit of a nation of American music, but also a contribution to the music of the whole world. In this meaning, I want to express the deepest grief for the deplorable loss to music. But may I mention that I lose also a friend whose amiable personality was very dear to me.
Thank you for those very beautiful words, Dr. Schoenberg. And now the David Bookman Orchestra plays one of the brighter Gershwin tunes, full of his joy of life. Somebody Loves Me. All right, David. Thank you, David Brookman. Another famous composer, ladies and gentlemen, comes here to pay his tribute to George Gershwin. He is Hoagy Carmichael, the writer of many famous songs of the South.
Well, I can't say much now, Conrad. There's so much pent up inside me since yesterday that I don't know what to say. I first met George years ago when we were both youngsters striving for some recognition. All through the years, we remained friends, visiting each other and exchanging opinions about everything under the sun. We had what you'd call mutual understanding of the finest, well, sort. And George Gershwin called me to his house one night to play over the entire score of Porgy. Of course, I was enthusiastic, but he told me to forget friendship and give him a sincere opinion of the opera before he submitted it to the publishers. To have him do that to me made me feel one of the proudest men in the world. I don't think, in fact, that any other composer under the sun could have done a job like Porgy. Porgy and Bess, that is. He had the feeling of his country and the genius necessary for such a great work. He did so many fine things, but I'll always remember him as a friend.
Well, I think what you said, Hoagy Carmichael, about George Gershwin as a friend is what we'd all want to say. And now, ladies and gentlemen, I want to introduce a gentleman who is known and loved from one end of California to the other, Rabbi Edgar Magnin.
Thank you, Conrad. I can't say that I'm happy to be here tonight. Ordinarily, I might make a statement of that sort. But we are here tonight on a sad occasion, to mourn the loss of one who was beloved by the people of America, from the length and the breadth of this land, yea, from the length and the breadth of the world. The name of George Gershwin is known, and his songs are sung. George Gershwin is not dead. The body of George Gershwin is at rest. The soul of George Gershwin is awake. The melodies and rhythms he created are the essence of the man. They reverberate in the hearts and minds of millions, countless millions. They bring joy and color to drab and lonely lives. And how many drab and lonely lives there are, not only in the hovels of the poor, but even in the palaces of the rich. The man and the melodies are one. The melodies live, therefore, the man lives. We live in what we create. We live in what we do. We live in what we are. Those who are anything, those who do anything, those who add to the riches of the world, live forever. This is, in my opinion, what immortality means. Gershwin was essentially an American, though of Russian Jewish ancestry. He wrote American music. He portrayed the rhythm and the soul of the American people. That is why Americans loved him and always will love him. That is why the world has accepted him. People will accept anything that is real, any man who's true to his own type, to his own age, to his own period, to his own soul, irrespective of country or race or belief or clime. He was true to his own genius. He was true to his own age. He lived not yesterday or in the far-off places of tomorrow, but today, here and now on American soil, and his music breathes the spirit of the American soil. He was independent and fearless in expressing his musical soul. Therefore, he was great, great in the kind of music he did. Have there been some greater, of course? Will there be some greater in the future? Of course there will be. Would he have developed to even greater heights had he lived? I think so. At all events, he intended to do so, for he was a serious composer. And it was his hope and ambition someday to be able to retire from the active world and compose things that were truly great. That was what was at the bottom of his heart. But the masses loved him. His music was in demand. They snatched from him every note as it came out of his mind. And he could not stop to do other things. Yet what he did, I say again, was great of its own kind, because it was essentially ingenuous and true and real and lacked the affectation and the highfalutin and the pedantic. In his music, one recognizes the American soul and tempo, crowded sidewalks, the hustle and bustle of daily life, of the daily grind, the crashing of machines, the whirling of wheels, the arrogant skyscrapers, the shrieking of motors, ambition, and the desire to grow rich at any price. The soul of a new people, a progressive people, crying out for progress, crying out for money, at any price, I say, yes. And he gave you the price in his music, the blues. The price of progress, the price of ambition, the price of useless energy, of hoarding up things which do us no good sometimes. The melancholy that comes and eats at the heart like a cancer. The loneliness of the soul even on 42nd and Broadway or on 7th and Broadway, Los Angeles. Amidst millions of people, the loneliness of a human being. All of us alone. The melancholy, the blues, the sadness of the human soul. All reflected. The dissatisfaction with the noisy merry-go-round of life. But also, he portrays the hurly-burly of everyday existence with its grind and the escape, the minor tone. All this with George Gershwin and all this is America. He
He loved the Negro strains. He realized that Negro music is at the bottom of real American music. The Negro hugged the soil. He worked on the plantation. Moreover, the Negro was a person of servitude. He suffered. And the Jew Gershwin knows what suffering is, as only the Jew can know what suffering is. So he felt the pulse and tempo and beat of Negro life, of the Negro heart. And he realized that from the plantation came that which would someday be the essence and the nucleus of great American music. For great art must come from the soil like the great trees, and out of the skies like the gentle rain that drops from heaven. Great art reaches out to the four corners of the earth, up and down and east and west. It is of the soil, it is of the stars, it is of the rain, it is of the dew, it is of the great sequoias and of the blade of grass. The Negro caught that thing on the plantation, that coupled with the rhythm of the tom-tom and the oppression of his heart and the sadness of his lot, he gave that to America for the foundation of its music. And upon that, Gershwin built. The disciple of King David is at rest. No longer will he play the harp strings with those deft hands. But the music of the harp strings will reverberate in the souls of those who loved him when the gentle winds of memory kiss those strings. One satisfaction the artist has, whether he's successful or not. Most of them are not. He was one of the few who was, in the fullest sense of success. But one thing the artist knows, that the man who sells the material things sells nothing, for they're eaten by rust and consumed by moths. That which is material is of a day and dies forever, soon to be forgotten or to be stored up as an antique in some museum. But he who creates from the soul, from the fiber of his being, from the inner sap of his own existence, he who gives beauty to the world, whether in painting, music, poetry, literature, or even the good word in this world, he gives something that is immortal, and that lasts as long as the heavens and the earth. So, George Gershwin, your body sleeps, but your heart is awake, and so is ours. And countless other hearts will be awake in years to come and decades yet unborn. Generations yet unborn who have not seen the light of this world will hear your strains and be moved and wooed, and will understand the age in which we are living, what kind of a world we are moving in now. They shall hear your music, George Gershwin, and they will know that though your body will be dust and ashes, that your soul will live. Good night, George Gershwin. Good night. And because you will be immortal, I shall add, good morning, George Gershwin, and good morning.
Thank you, Dr. Magnan. You've said so well what we all feel. And now a famous modern conductor, Fred Waring, has come to offer a word of tribute from George Gershwin's own world, the international realm of fine music.
There's so little I could say except to add that we've lost a very dear personal friend and professional friend as well. I've had the pleasure of serving with George on a number of committees and on boards and various societies. He's always been so fine with our people. It was the spirit in George's music that made it live for me. Mr. Nagel has told you something about the man. I should like to pay a little tribute to his songs. In his lighter works, there was gentle laughter. In his heavier works, a mixture of plaintiveness and triumph, and a spirit that told you in a way that you could not forget that it was written by a great artist. The things in music that many of us have done seem little by comparison.
Thank you, Fred Waring. It was in the autumn of 1923, ladies and gentlemen, that Paul Whiteman brought his band from the smoky atmosphere of a New York nightclub to the rarefied air of Aeolian Hall, there to play for George Gershwin the composition that on that night was to cause a conglomerate gathering of musicians and uptowners and east siders to hail this young composer as a great maker of modern music. The old rafters literally vibrated in the storm of applause that night, and ghosts of serious musicians, big names of the past, were as gleeful as the audience that wept and cheered and made mighty tumult. A genius had proved himself, a genius who bore the name George Gershwin. And the composition was Rhapsody in Blue. It is with this, the mightiest of all his work, that we bring to a close this tribute to George Gershwin, David Brookman and his orchestra.
Thank you.
you, David Brookman. We've gathered here tonight, ladies and gentlemen, in Hollywood to bring together those in the West who knew, admired, yes, and loved a great man, a great genius, George Gershwin. We feel rich in the fact that we can have forever his glowing, living spirit embodied in these works. We have seen but the beginnings of the name of George Gershwin. Our sorrow can well be mingled with a sense of pride for having known him. Here tonight have been many of Gershwin's friends at the theater and the world in general to wish him Godspeed. This is Conrad Nagel speaking, and I'm very proud to have had a small part in this tribute.
This is the Mutual Broadcasting System.